The Health and Human Services Committee will come to order. We're going to begin by going through the governor's recommendations for the budget today, and we're beginning with the Department of Health. And then we'll be followed, that will be followed by the presentation that we didn't have time for the other day about health technology. So we'll begin with Craig Eichholm today and Scott Lights. We tried to get the lights on a little brighter in here so we can read all these little numbers.
Okay, a little numbers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. And thank you for the opportunity to come back and present the governor's budget recommendations for the Department of Health. I'm Craig Eichholm. I'm the chief financial officer for the agency. With me today is Scott Lights, the assistant commissioner at the Department of Health. Before I begin talking about change pages, just to frame this conversation, the governor released his budget on Tuesday, and he started off his presentation that shows of that money, approximately two-thirds goes out to our partners in direct grants, and only about a third is kept at the Department of Health for operations. You can see that we can't do our work without our partnerships, without our partners out in the communities, and that's an important part of maintaining a public health system here in Minnesota. And finally, the last page shows a pie chart which divides it across our budget across our four program areas. And you can see community and family health makes up the largest, promotion makes up the largest percentage of our budget with almost half at $491 million. The WIC program, for example, is part of that, which is our largest federal program. Policy, quality, and compliance makes up 28%, which oversees our health policy and our compliance monitoring divisions, which oversees inspections at nursing homes, long-term care facilities, includes our health economics programs and our rural health program. Our health protection is $176 million at 17%. This includes our infectious disease epidemiology, our laboratory, our Office of Emergency Preparedness, and our environmental health division. And finally, administrative support services makes up only 7% of the overall agency budget. Madam Chair, I'm wondering if there's any questions so far before we begin on the change page.
Any questions so far? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Eichholm, is it Eichholm? Okay. I appreciate your remarks, and I know we're going to get into the details, but just, you know, because you took the time to put a certain impression on those remarks, and we're going to hear a lot more details, I'm sure, but just the initial things that I'm hearing about, I'm having a hard time in my mind figuring out how those things work with a couple of the goals you said. Long-term prevention, for example. I'm wondering how closing dental clinics for poor people and denying them dental care fits with the strategy of long-term prevention. And I was told that there was even a statement in one of the line items that said, well, people will just have to, when they have a dental emergency, they'll just have to go to emergency rooms, which we know is a much more expensive way to deal with these issues, to say nothing of, you know, the moral and economic issues that result from people not having access to dental care. We also know that Minnesota, when it comes to health care disparities, ranks low in comparison to other states. And again, I'm wondering how cutting low-income people off of access to health care and eliminating their dental benefits
determine the level of insured people in our state. Has there ever been any thought of sort of combining these telephone surveys to get greater efficiencies?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that. Perhaps Mr. Golden could answer.
I mean, that is a fairly large sample size.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jim Golden, Director for the Division of Health Policy at the Department of Health. The issue with the access survey which is a biennial survey, and the behavioral risk factor surveys. They are both telephone surveys. And the issue with a telephone survey is you can get about 20 minutes worth of time from a person, and the number of questions in both of the surveys are at the 20-minute limit. So the problem is that there's really no overlap between the surveys other than the question of do you the insurance status, and that's really to be able to tie it to the other questions about chronic disease. So I think that the challenge would be is you would not be able to do either of the surveys in the same level of depth that they're currently being done.
Madam Chair. Senator Rosen?
I'm probably off on this, but wasn't policy quality and compliance unalived this last?
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I could have sworn that policy quality and compliance was in the unallotment. Was that?
Well, I don't have the list of unallotments here. But my understanding is that in some cases, programs were unallotted, not based on whether the activity was going to be continuing at
that level.
At the previous funding level, but whether they had extra money laying around.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, you can't unallot money that's already out the door. And so the unallotment candidates, I guess would be the way to put it, the list was reduced to what programs still had not sent money out the door.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I like your question about whether we're doing a dual service. Perhaps that they can get together and look at ways they can combine this. And it's a half
I also
million,
know that there are other surveys that go on within the state of Minnesota. There's a well-being survey that takes place every day. And it just seems to me that it would be worth our while to at least explore
right. The
idea of combining some of these efforts to see if we can't get greater efficiencies. You know, this is a lot of money to spend in a year when we don't have any money. We'd also like to know how much is available in the federal funding for this activity.
Madam Chair, I believe it's $250,000, $275,000 per year.
Thank you. Other questions on this page? Okay, let's go on then.
Madam Chair, the next critical investment we have is around our e-health initiative. As this body is aware, the governor is recommending $350,000 per year for base funding for the Center for Health Informatics to ensure our statutory mandates are achieved. As this body is aware, 2 years ago the governor proposed and the legislature concurred in making a significant investment in e-health around the state that included funding for this center, which provides direction, technical expertise, is ensuring the interoperability standards and the recommendations to encourage the use of electronic health records and personal health records across the state. That money then runs out at the end of this biennium, so June 30th. This would continue that investment, allowing us to meet our e-prescribing commitments by 2011 and our e-health electronic health record commitments by 2015.
I guess maybe we could use a little bit more explanation of what the $350,000 would be spent on, since we're not really making grants any longer.
Madam Chair, this would continue to fund the four positions in the Center for Health Informatics, and they would continue to oversee the e-health advisory committee. They would continue to develop the statewide plan for interoperability. They would administer the current loan program that is still active, even though there is no more money for loans. They would develop and adopt the uniform standards, develop recommendations for technologies to implement these efforts. They would recommend develop recommendations to ensure Minnesotans have access to online personal health portfolios, and they would develop recommendations and solutions to eliminate the barriers to the exchange of information between entities. I would also point out that as part of the federal economic stimulus package, there's $20 billion set aside for electronic health record implementation across the country. I think this would be a very important group of people to keep in place to ensure direction and oversight for that effort should it pass.
Well, that's the reason we're having this other presentation later.
Exactly.
Are there any questions on this page? All right, let's move on then.
Our final critical investment, Madam Chair, is for tuberculosis prevention and control. The governor is recommending $200,000 per year from the general fund to increase funding for our TB lab capacity, treatment, and prevention.
On at some point, throwing a little investment, I'm worried about if we're going to really see our return there. You know, there's at some level. Perhaps it's not enough. We are ultimately not successful, but frankly, we haven't been given the tools, we haven't been given the resources in order that we can become successful. And I'm not sure where that breaking point is, but since I thought $47 million was not enough, this is very concerning to me. So I'm trying to balance that with the fact that you've indicated that the Department of Health, this is a top priority. It's hard for me to see that.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, these are challenging economic times. There were cuts made to all kinds of programs across the spectrum. There was nothing that was off the table. I think the fact that we are able to maintain this level of funding for a program that hasn't been implemented yet clearly shows what kind of priority it is for our department. I understand your concerns. I would say that $6 million a year as an investment is still a significant sum of money, and we'll see results in the communities that we serve. The STEPS program, which this is based off of, operates on less than $3 million a year and serves four cities. I mean, we expect about 10 grantees, and while we may not get the same level of results as we would have seen with $47 million, we very much expect this to show results and make changes here in Minnesota.
You know, the STEPS program is being recommended to go national and not no longer be sort of a demonstration program. Do you know if Minnesota would be eligible to receive more funding when that happens?
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Cara McNulty, our SHIP coordinator, to come up and
answer that question.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. Although STEPS is going national, it's now going to be called Healthy Communities. The current budget is to fund every state for $50,000. CDC clearly said if you are given STEPS funding, we give you 5 years. And because Minnesota has had 5 years of funding, although we could get further funds, right now we'll be allocated $50,000.
And how much had our previous grant been?
$2.1 million.
Thank you. Are there other questions on this page? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize if I'm not understanding this as clearly as I should, but when you talk about the same level of investment for those who do get the benefit of the program, does that mean that there will be substantially fewer communities who will be eligible to participate? And does that mean that particularly expanding this in rural Minnesota, in areas like my district, well, and I guess I don't want to be too parochial about this, but I mean we started this as a pilot project. Apparently it's been successful. The goal was to expand this to other communities. It sounds like those other communities now will not have access to that benefit. Is that going to be the net result?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, that is the net result. As this committee is probably remembers, this program was set up to be based on competitive grants. So it was always meant to do that. We were going to base our decisions, scoring criteria, based on RFP, which is coming out in February. This will mean that the grant size remains the same, but there are fewer grantees. And so you're right, there would be more competition for those grants. But in terms of whether they would be in rural Minnesota, urban Minnesota, with tribes, with community health boards, I think that'll depend on the quality of the RFPs or proposals that come in.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, does it really depend on the quality of the RFP, or if you're looking at an outcome-based model, does it sometimes mean that in areas where you have more challenging populations because of poverty issues and so forth, that those communities are less likely to be eligible? I mean, I don't know the answer, but that's a real concern that I have, because when we already are rating poorly when it comes to disparities in health care, if we're going to be using that kind of an outcome-based standard that in other areas like education is traditionally just directed more dollars toward affluent areas and away from less affluent areas, I mean, how does that work?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we'll look at the RFP will come out February 9th, and we'll look at the criteria for scoring in geographic distribution, applicant readiness for policy systems and environmental change, the degree to which high-risk or at-risk populations can be addressed, if people are ready to implement the menu of interventions that have been outlined, and the ability to address all four settings, which is school, community, healthcare, worksite. So it'll be an application that has many factors. It won't be who can just write the best application or who can pull together something quickly. It'll be who has readiness, what's the geographical distribution, where is the highest risk population. So I think it's a very comprehensive application and will lead to a comprehensive distribution of funds.
And Senator Olson, you know, one of the pilot sites was Rochester, and they implemented a program with all of their WIC families, and those were low-income families. And, of course, the children are young and are developing. But the program was really learning how to play in a way that you're more active physically with your children. Very simple. I'm not even sure you could call it equipment. Very simple things, string, balloons, things like that. And the outcome was after a year, an average of 7 pounds was lost. I don't think it was lost by the growing children. It was lost by the parents who were playing more actively with their children. And this was a low-income population. And I think the goal of the program was to teach families and parents for life, not just when they're in a program, but how to do this on their own at home with their children. And a lot of the things that were in other parts of the program were very systemic. Another example would be Wilmer. They went and visited with all of the factory owners in town and talked to them about the break food they were offering their employees. And they went from donuts and soda pop to perhaps you could, since your budget page here doesn't do it, delineate between the portion of the recommendation that would be for grant funding and the portion that would be for administration.
Madam Chair, that's included on the spreadsheet which the committee has. It's about, we are recommending, the governor's recommending 10% per year be for administration.
Perhaps you could let us know within the administrative portion what that's going to be spent on.
Madam Chair, we'd be happy to provide that information.
Spreadsheet.
Other questions on this page? Right, let's go on then.
I could ask a page to deliver this to Senator Sharon, please. The next change page involving health reform adjustments is a change in the recommendation to the essential benefits set, which was included in the health reform package from last session. The governor is recommending replacing the activities associated with defining an essential benefits set with a less expensive study on value-based insurance design utilizing our existing health economics program research capacity. Madam Chair, maybe I'd stop there and see if there's any questions about this and
value-based
Commissioner Light's answer.
Well, I guess the question I have is what is meant by value-based insurance design? You know, when we were talking about this during the conference committee last year, we wanted to use the words value-based benefits set, and we were told that was not acceptable to the administration. So we ended up with the words essential benefits set. And I guess I'm just having difficulty understanding what the difference is between what the original requirement is and what the new recommendation is.
Madam Chair, the distinction between the two, between the essential benefits set work that was passed in the 2008 bill and what's being proposed in the governor's budget, lies along the lines of what's required in the 08 bill is for the department to convene a large stakeholder group to look at building essentially from the ground up what services are essential to have in a benefit set, broadly speaking. And then on top of that, to look at whether or not there are opportunities to build in differential cost sharing for services that have evidence basis of being effective or cost saving. What's being proposed in the governor's budget is that we replace the bottom-up design of that with a study that would look at two things. The first would be, what is the state of the art with regards to value-based benefit design, meaning what do we know about what health plans, what academics and others are talking about with how we could design healthcare benefits more effectively to encourage the use through things like cost-sharing incentives of high-quality, low-cost providers. And then secondly, to summarize from the evidence that we have available from other states, Massachusetts, Oregon, and others, around what is being done in benefit design more broadly. So in Oregon, for example, they've had a prioritized list for many years on the Medicaid program. We would take a look at that and other state examples to bring that information to the legislature around what's being done with regards to establishing benefit sets and then what is being done and what could be done around establishing benefit sets that have incentives built in for people to use high-quality, low-cost providers.
And if I'm not remembering this correctly, please refresh my memory, but I believe this study is also funded with healthcare access funds.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So if we were to make a reduction here, then the funds that would not be allocated would revert to the healthcare access fund. Other questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the background that's provided among your reasons, your rationale for making this suggested change here is that there was lack of clarity of the intended uses of the ultimate study results. And I would just encourage you that if at any time we have not been clear enough, that you should feel free to come back and ask for that clarity. And you'll also note that going forward with this essential benefits that would be challenging. And frankly, I think that some of our best work is in fact challenging. And I don't think that that's a reason to not move forward with something because it was challenging and it will be difficult, and no other states do this, although you do make some reference to Oregon. Frankly, I would think that again would be a reason why we would in fact want to do this, because we should be wanting to lead the nation in healthcare reform. So I'm very concerned about this. I think you also indicate that there's no connection here with the overall healthcare reform package that was passed in 2008, and I would beg to differ. We talked repeatedly about the need to not just focus on access, not just focus on cost containment, not just focus on quality, but in fact, we need all of those pieces. And that was a real strength, I think, that we had in our reform package in 2008, and I think this was a key component here. We cannot afford to do business as usual, and we had asked the commissioner to convene this group and work on this so that we could move forward. I hope we're more clear next time.
Assistant Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch, we agree that this is an important issue. We fully agree that the issue of how we design benefits to encourage the use of those providers who have higher quality and lower cost is an important issue, and that we're looking at what services we have evidence for that are effective relative to things that we're paying for now that may not be as effective. We believe that in the governor's proposal, we can still accomplish those efforts and still accomplish the goals of what this was intended to do without the appropriation that was made in the 08 session. So we actually fully agree with your comments about the need to do this, the importance of doing this. We intend to do it. We believe we can do it within existing resources, still working with that same stakeholder community in a slightly different way. They'll be consultative to the study. And so we agree it's an important issue, and I think that's why we want to move it forward using existing resources.
And Assistant Commissioner, do you believe the recommendation for a reduced level of funding would be made by the administration if the money were going to revert back to the Health Care Access Fund?
Madam Chair, I believe the recommendation in the governor's budget page is simply reflective of the fact that we believe this effort can be accomplished without this appropriation using existing resources.
But then we would not have our studies that we usually direct you to do without cost. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, the recommendation here would be to use those studies as this recommendation.
So we would be giving up the two free studies that you generally offer us a year, biennium, I mean.
Madam Chair, that is the proposal.
Are there other questions?
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I don't know if this is the same concern as others, or maybe we all have different concerns with this proposal, but last session, there was talk about funding a more general study that would have looked more broadly at different kinds of healthcare reform directions in order to decide what type of healthcare reform might generate the most savings while providing, you know, it also addressing issues like access and quality. And as I'm sure everyone at this table and in this room knows, there are different philosophies about the direction we should be going with regard to healthcare reform. It seems to me like, I don't know anything about the group that you're talking about doing this study, but it seems to me that you're combining, or even in a more limiting way, making sure that only one philosophy toward healthcare reform is at the table, and that concerns me.
Well, just to make it clearer, Senator Olson, this was trying to look at how benefit sets are designed. So, for example, we'll use one that's pretty easy. Co-payments or deductibles that are applied to insulin or diabetic supplies. Perhaps that is not a cost-effective way to design a benefit set, since we know that diabetics not getting their insulin or not getting their diabetic supplies because they can't afford the copay or the deductible means we'll have, you know, worse health outcomes. Mm-hmm. So it was to look at things like that. It was also on the other side to look at things that maybe aren't especially beneficial that are in our benefit sets now, and to try to maybe increase co-payments on those things. People could still do it if they wanted to, but it would just be more out of their own pocket rather than, you know, so much today we just have across the board. Even in our own Medicaid program, you know, we have co-payments on drugs, and it includes insulin. And, in fact, the insulin co-pay is a weekly co-pay, not a monthly co-pay. So that's what this is about. I don't think it has anything to do with the philosophy of one payment system versus another. It more has to do with the way that we structure the benefits within whatever payment system we would have. Are there other questions on this page? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to your point, I think you expressed a point where I have concern as well. If we continue to use the diabetic copay and supply example, what I'm concerned about, if we move away from a large stakeholder group, which I think was the first recommendation, to a more narrow group of academics or whoever, who decides who's at the table to decide this value-based insurance design are going to determine the outcomes. And in the diabetic example you gave, if you have producers of diabetic equipment and sellers of diabetic supplies at the table defining how these benefits are put together, that is going to determine some outcomes. So once you step away from a large stakeholder group where you have everyone at the table trying to decide and define benefit sets, you're going to get a skewed result. And
well, that might be true. I certainly hope we're not talking about having anyone involved in this who would have a conflict of interest in terms of, you know, being a manufacturer or seller or having a patent on anything that might be included or not included in a recommendation. Assistant Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson-Ropes, we would be consulting with the same group of people under either approach, whether it was the original passed bill or the governor's proposal. So that group will be the same group that we would be consulting with. And they wouldn't include people who had conflicts of interest, but rather we would have representation from providers, from health plans, from employers, and others who are involved in the business of either designing or implementing healthcare benefits.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, but that's still the same group of people that believe in the system the way it is right now, rather than moving to a variety of other approaches. So you're still self-limiting the outcomes by going to that same group of people. And then additionally, if you're just going to be consulting this group as opposed to the group designing the benefit sets, it's two different things.
Other questions on this item? Okay, let's move on then.
Madam Chair, the next three change pages have to do with grant reductions or grant shifts. The next item is two grant eliminations of non-base funded grants. These are time-limited single-source grants. One is for the Community Healthcare Demonstration Project, which was a five-year grant program in Carlton, Cook, Lake, and St. Louis County. This program was designed to develop and operate a community-based healthcare program that offers individuals the option of purchasing healthcare coverage on a fixed prepaid basis without meeting the usual state health insurance requirements. This program was passed 2 years ago in the 2007 session. It's a five-year program. This proposal would eliminate the final 3 years of funding for this program. Second, non-base grant program is a Merck grant, which was supplemental to the annual Merck grant awards made through the distribution process. In 2 years ago also, the distribution formula changed. That significantly impacted certain hospitals which participate in the medical education and research program. In particular, the Mayo Clinic lost money in that formula redesign. And this money was a supplemental grant to Mayo to offset some of the costs to compensate for their costs in clinical training programs. Mayo receives $1 million a year for the next 2 years. This proposal would eliminate that funding.
Questions? Senator Pretner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Akam, it's really hard for me to understand for the small amount of this grant to northeastern counties how this is cost effective. This is a grant that finally the program was launched in the fall of this past year. It has a fairly significant impact. I notice it says that it has, in your language, says that there are few enrollees, but it was brought to a group of healthcare providers by employers of people, working people who cannot afford health insurance, and they were willing to set up a program that would provide the providers and the coverage for those employees in this area with a small limited premium by both the employer and the employee. It has ensured that parents have been able to have insurance and are able to have health care coverage. They're already finding that there are less absences from work because people do have health care coverage and are able to have better health care. I just can't understand how this is a wise investment. Our whole effort is to try to provide health care coverage for people so that they can work in their communities and we can have a thriving economy. And $208,000 a year is not very much.
Madam Chair, Senator Pretner-Solon.
Mr. Acom.
I think that, you know, the key to these grant reductions were non-base reductions to our programs. And these were, you know, certainly in these challenging economic times, we're looking to protect our core programs. These were programs that weren't going to last forever. They were going to come to an end. I think that part of the calculation that went into choosing, making these choices was that.
Madam Chair?
Senator?
What core programs? You're cutting GAMC and you're cutting Minnesota Care. What core programs are you saving?
Madam Chair, Senator Pretner-Solon, again, those are DHS programs. They're not Department of Health programs. And we didn't work together on developing our proposals. You know, I would leave it to that agency to discuss those changes.
Mr. Acom, I understand how difficult it is to cut budgets. I've been doing it for far too long. I've been doing it almost continuously since Governor Pawlenty took office, in fact. So I understand, you know, that sometimes we do take one-time money because the other choices are not as attractive. But we do have a structural budget deficit, and I don't believe the governor's budget actually structurally balances. Has anybody looked at that?
Madam Chair, I can't speak for the overall governor's budget. In terms of that, I would have to defer that question to Minnesota Management and Budget.
Well, it is something to think about when we're looking at what we're doing in terms of one-time budget reductions.
Madam Chair?
Senator Pretner.
One follow-up. I noticed that your key goal is to reduce the rate of uninsured Minnesotans in 2011 below the 2004 rates. So how does eliminating this health care program reduce the number of uninsured?
Madam Chair, Senator Pretner-Solon, it probably does.
Well, not to mention eliminating 113,000 people from public programs is going to shoot this goal in the eye, I would say. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Acom, could you just reference, is there another page in here that reflects the state's commitment to medical education?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, the MERC program is actually has a change page in the DHS budget. We have talked about the unallotment of that program at the last hearing. I'd be happy to talk about what the governor is recommending, but I, because we also administer the program, but I really also think that that's a DHS conversation.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Assistant Commissioner Lights, can you tell me if there's been communication between the agency and the Mayo Clinic with regard to this particular change?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, the Mayo Clinic is aware of this change page. They were made aware of it after the governor's budget was released. We also met with Mayo and some other stakeholders after the at the release of the budget to make them aware of what the MRF changes would be as well. That would be contained in the Department of Human Services budget.
And Senator Lynch, we will be taking public testimony on the governor's budget when we get through with it, you know, going through it and trying to understand it ourselves. And so if they want to testify, they would have an opportunity.
Thank you.
Other questions, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. A. Komen. And just to follow up on a comment that you made about not coordinating with the Department of Human Services, you know, I realize in response to the first comments I made that most of that is not directly within your budget, but you're talking about overall state goals. And I guess I assumed, I guess incorrectly, that there would have been that kind of conversation and coordination. I mean, maybe that's naive of me, but considering how much time the state has spent on healthcare reform in the last couple of years and how important these priorities are and how intertwined your two departments are, how can you possibly plan policy initiatives without sitting down together as you look at these budgets? I mean, when you so that's my first comment. And I guess the second would be, once again, the lack of transparency in this budgeting process as it goes forward. I mean, one of the complaints we get from constituents is that there isn't an opportunity to react when decisions are made at the end of the road in conference committee behind closed doors as to what some of that impact might be. I would think that the governor, in putting his budget together, would, for example, have talked to the Mayo Clinic before releasing the budget instead of afterwards as you're kind of going through this process. And I know we'll have that opportunity here, but why don't we want to work with our constituents and work with the public as we put these things together and have as much transparency as possible? I guess I'm just surprised at that.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, to answer your last question first, I'll answer both your questions. The Department of Health and the Department of Human Services certainly communicate with each other on a wide range of issues, and we coordinate activities that are of common interest to both of us. You know, certainly the Department of Health is more interested in population protection, or the Department of Human Services about individual services. And there is some overlap in those two efforts, but they're very distinct and different priorities and missions. I would say that in part of the budget setting process is that the governor has to have time internally to vet ideas. And not all the ideas were vetted are reflected here. Not all the ideas here, came about because of stakeholder involvement. Some are very hard and difficult decisions. But the governor presents them here to allow for a public vetting after they're packaged in this way so that you as legislators and the public can have the conversation then.
Other questions on this page? Let's move on then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next proposal is the governor is recommending changing a change to our local public health block grants. We currently make those payments on a monthly basis. He's proposing that we move to a quarterly basis. We think there'd be some administrative savings there as well. And then he is proposing a end of the biennium shift of one quarter's worth of payments, which equals $5.193 million from the end of fiscal year 2011 to the beginning of fiscal year 2012. Allowing for a one-time savings.
Questions about this page? Okay. Let's move on then.
The final grant reduction Madam Chair, is to our Family Planning Special Projects Program. The governor is recommending a $1.05 million reduction to the base funding for this program out into the future. The rationale for this, as people are aware, the Family Planning Special Projects Grant was established in 1978 to reduce unintended pregnancies. In 2006, the Department of Human Services implemented an 1115 MA waiver, which allowed assistance based on federal funds to people, to women, to reduce unintended pregnancies at 200% of federal poverty guidelines. This program has served over 25,000 individuals in 2007 and 34,000 in 2008. It's anticipated to serve 39,000 in 2011. While this represents a 20% reduction to our current efforts at the Department of Health, we feel that this proposal will not reduce overall family planning unintended pregnancy efforts in the state in light of the waiver.
Mr. Eichholm, you know that a family planning waiver only affects people.
The $225,000 is reflected at the end of the 2009 program. And so to continue this program at the level that it is in statute, we would need the additional $163,000 to comply with session law. And finally, the emergency preparedness and response in our tracking from 2007, the preparedness and response was to receive $100,000 in fiscal year 10 and 11. The rider language was inadvertently omitted, and so there is not a connection between the tracking and the rider language. We would ask that this technical change is needed to carry out the legislative intent of that previous legislation, restore the funding indicated in session tracking.
Just a question in regard to the emergency preparedness and response item. I realize this is just a technical correction, but are we still working on trying to respond to bird flu in the department?
Madam Chair, of course, always. And, you know, we certainly made some strides with the one-time funding for the stockpiling of antivirals and other supplies. We have a stockpile in place. We have developed plans around emergency response for bird flu. We're continuing our epidemiology and lab capacity exercises, along with training exercises with our local partners to respond to that.
And what is the shelf life of those antivirals?
5 years, Madam Chair.
And they were purchased when?
Last year, Madam Chair.
Any other questions about this page?
Madam Chair, I have one question. Thank you. You know, in my mind, this is one of the things that the general public out there really believes that is the function of government, to make sure that we're planning ahead for major disasters in a way that, you know, might be visited upon Minnesota, that we're fully planned and ready to take care of everyone. And, you know, I'm very concerned if we start making cuts in this area. However distant avian flu and some of the global epidemics may seem, you know.
Senator Erickson-Ropes, this isn't a cut.
Sorry.
This is just a technical change, a correction to a problem that was created in last year's budget.
All right. I'm sorry. I was half paying attention because I'm doing some additional work at my table. I'm sorry. But it still remains, and I hear this back in my district, that I think this is still one of the key areas that is a function of government. It doesn't happen to people on a daily basis. It's not an outreach program, but, boy, this is something that we really need to stand on. So thank you.
Any other comments on this page? All right. Let's move on then.
Madam Chair, the remaining change pages have to do with fee proposals for our agency, and I'll try to walk through them quickly. The first one is the occupational therapy duplicate license fee. The governor is recommending establishing a new fee for issuing a duplicate license of an occupational therapy license. This will generate approximately $1,000 to the SGSR fund, and it's intended to recover the administrative cost only from those licensees needing a duplicate license.
I think for all of these that we're going to be going through now, our understanding is that these fees are being increased to support the ongoing activity, and so we don't have in our budget books the fund balances for these programs, and I think it'd be helpful if we could get that.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to provide our latest department earnings report for all of our programs. And just as a reminder to the committee, our fee programs are required to balance out over a 4 or 5 year period. And so the fees we set reflect the cost of doing the activity for which they're collected. And we try to balance that that out over time. So.
Questions on this page? Not, let's move on.
Madam Chair, the next change item is the health instrument dispenser certification fee. The governor recommends increasing the certification fee and the examination fee for hearing instrument dispensers so that this program balances. The account is currently running in the red without a fee increase.
Questions on this page? Let's move on.
Madam Chair, the next one is the Vital Records Technology Improvement Fee. The governor recommends maintaining this fee, which was a $2 surcharge implemented back in 2005, which initially was meant to cover an improvement in technology, which has been implemented and has actually improved the process for delivering birth and death certificates. However, the program costs have been going up over that time. And this fee, rather than allowing it to sunset at the end of this year, the governor recommends it stays in place to cover the cost of the program.
Are there any questions on this page? Not, let's move on.
Madam Chair, the next fee proposal is the adverse health events program fee. The governor is recommending increasing the fee for adverse health events reporting at hospitals and ambulatory surgical centers to provide an additional $73,000 annually to support the program.
Any questions about this page?
The drinking water contaminants change page represents a new activity in the department. The source water protection will supplement our existing source water protection efforts.
So why don't you go through these, but we will understand that they may or may not be handled in this division.
Of course, Madam Chair. And just to review, the language in the constitutional amendment set aside money from the state sales tax for the arts, for the outdoors, and for clean water. Of the clean water percentage, part of that was set aside for drinking water. Drinking water protection is a core environmental health activity at the Department of Health. And these two proposals in the governor's budget reflect that work. First, the drinking water contaminants. The governor is recommending funding be appropriate to assess and address public health concerns related to contaminants found in Minnesota drinking water, for which no health-based drinking water standard is currently available. We have recently, in recent years, had a number of concerns by the public and by legislators of chemicals that have been found in drinking water, including the PFC issue, as an example, here in the Twin Cities. We have not had the capacity to do anything other than respond to those efforts. This would allow us to begin to work to do preemptive work, identifying those contaminants, understanding the health risks, and assessing the threats to the public. The other change page on source water protection is this is a current activity that we have. The governor recommends the funding be appropriate to strengthen the protection of drinking water sources by providing enhancing source water characterization, accelerating the development of source water protection plans, improving data sharing, and enhancing technical assistance. We do all this now based on, as authorized under Minnesota statute and related rules. we currently do this with the fees and with federal funds and grants. This would enhance that activity to help us work with local communities to develop plans, delineate protection zones, provide technical assistance, and to do more than our current effort in protecting groundwater sources.
Are there questions about this? Okay, move on then.
Madam Chair, the next change item is about our well program fees. The governor is recommending the following changes to address a current budget shortfall in that program and to ensure minimum operating levels of the state well program. We're going to remove the current government exemption from well program fees. As of right now, government agencies do not pay the well program fees. We are creating a reduced fee for government-owned monitoring well maintenance permits and creating a graduated fee structure for larger groundwater thermal heat exchange systems.
Questions about this page? Now, let's move on.
Madam Chair, the next change item is swimming pool inspection and plan review. The governor is recommending an adjustment to the swimming pool, the public swimming pool licensing and plan review fees to reflect the cost of service and to maintain staffing levels needed to perform legislatively mandated requirements.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Acomb, can you tell me how the department does this licensing and the plan review on these? On this, are you talking about going out? Does the department go out and review these pools, or do you hire a contractor to do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, we currently have staff, or we delegate the authority to cities and counties that use their staff, but all the inspections and reviews are completed by government employees.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
This is an area of concern, especially out in greater Minnesota, believe it or not. I mean, some of these smaller communities have their pools, and they're barely holding on mm-hmm. to the pools. Now, as I understood it, they were told that a contractor had to come out and retrofit the new drainage for the Abigail Pool Act, and it's very, very, very expensive on these small cities, and they don't have any fund balances to comply with the new law, and they also feel that they could comply with the law if they could do the apparatus themselves. But these companies that are going out there to hire, that they have to hire to come in and retrofit the drain, are exaggerated the prices from what they used to be. So a lot of these small community pools are going to be closing, and they're very concerned. I've gotten 3 phone calls in my Senate district, and there's not much in these little communities to draw or keep or maintain people. A community pool is a big deal. So when you have a fund balance of less than $20,000 in some of these small towns, but they do have a pool, it's a huge deal. So I guess I'm just very concerned about this from the Department of Health. I don't know if there's something we can do to help these small communities, maybe delay the implementation of this act, or I don't know. I'm very concerned about it. Is anybody else around the committee having the same problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Senator Rosen, you know, when Senator came forward with the bill, we had this discussion. And we actually voted to allow publicly owned pools to ask for a waiver from the Department of Health for a longer period of time. And then the bill went to the full Finance Committee. And, of course, it was a very emotional bill. And we lost that language. But instead, Senator Anderson's division came up with some funds to make grants to communities that own public pools. And I know I received a report about where the grants went, the pools, to make sure the drains are still functioning properly. So Installing is one issue, and that's sort of not on this page. But the fee for inspecting is. And, I mean, I don't know. I guess. Well, why don't we get your question answered first, and then I'll ask a question.
Well, I'm not really sure what my question is, Madam Chair, but I do know that I received some complaints that they were asked to, the small towns were asked to fill out the survey by July 1st, and they didn't receive the survey till July, beginning of July. And of course, the pool is full of water, so there it's very hard to go in there and survey the drainage system as it is. So they were very frustrated with the whole process from the beginning. I don't think, and I don't want to speak for everybody, I don't think there's a problem with complying with the law, because they understand that it is how this whole thing has gotten very expensive for them, mm-hmm. because they see it's ripe for a new person to come in and say, well, I can install it, and it's going to cost X amount of dollars, when perhaps it can be installed locally and then reviewed by the department.
Madam Chair, I've asked John Link Stein, our Director of Environmental Health, to join us to answer these questions.
Madam Chair, John Stein, Director of Environmental Health Division. Senator Rosen, the requirements to inspect are requirements that are carried out by the state in 48 counties and local jurisdictions. Sorting out those numbers of the costs are many of the pools had deferred maintenance challenges, plumbing systems that were old and faulty and had not been replaced, or pools were at their end of life cycle, and so going in to modify them to properly install the drains systems resulted in additional work needing to be done. So that's how you can get to a number like $200,000. The simple installation of a drain cover to conform to the requirements of the Act probably is about a $500 to $1,000 project. We consult and advise communities daily, multiple times daily, sometimes, to give them assistance in understanding what will comply with the code requirements and the requirements of the state and federal law. And if there's a community that's really struggling, Senator Berglund's correct, we did award 11 grants last year to local units of government. The Department of Natural Resources actually processed those grants through their community recreation grants program. That was help to those communities that could not afford and did not have a fee that they charged for entrance to those pools. So we see that there's a number of interested communities. We give them as much technical support as we can. Certainly if they're being bilked, in their view, they should talk to us and we should give them some assistance. What other communities are doing, we can give them advice.
So back to this page then. By increasing the fee, could you let us know how much is the fee now and how much would it be under this proposal?
Yes, Madam Chair. Current.
Madam Chair, this changes a number of fees, and so we can provide a list.
Yes, thank you.
You have the list with you?
I have a draft version of it. I'm getting to the pool,
I think
pool
municipal
fees.
Pools are the ones that we're concerned about, publicly owned pools.
New pool construction fees are changed from $800 for a new pool to $1,500 for an alteration of a pool, from $400 to $600. Spa pools from $500 to $800. There's an additional charge if the pool is deemed to be a large pool, which would be more of a competition-sized swimming pool for events that require larger systems. And then there are various fees for a number of other categories related to the type of work that might involve the disinfection system or other components of the pool that require special reviews.
So this is not like an annual fee. This is a fee for when they're having the pool replaced.
Madam Chair, that's correct. It's a plan review fee.
One time. And is there an annual fee that's being increased in this budget page also?
Madam Chair, there is a licensing fee adjustment. I'm not finding it currently, but I'll get that information to you. It's a small adjustment in the annual fee.
Do you know how much the annual fee is now?
Madam Chair, I don't have that right in front of me. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I will say, though, Mr. Linkstein was very helpful to the community that I'm talking about in particular. The department was very helpful in walking them through what they had to do, but it's still, obviously, with those fee increases, it's still a hardship.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Acomb, I'm wondering when this bill, or when the law went into effect last year, I'm assuming we got a fiscal note that would have delineated the cost of enforcing this law. So did that fiscal note was that not funded? Or, why this big discrepancy just a year later in terms of the cost or the need for additional dollars to support the law?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, the fiscal note last year was part of the Abigail Taylor law that was passed. Was built off estimates of the number of pools statewide. We've since refined that number to a more accurate assessment of how many pools would be involved, and we're able to set the fees more accurately based on that number.
But I think the point is there was a fee that was provided in that legislation. And so if you had more pools than you originally anticipated, you would have had more revenue than the bill originally anticipated. I think the question here is, why do we have to increase the fees over what we originally anticipated they would need to be?
Madam Chair, the bill last year appropriated funds but did not change the fees. The fees were restructured in the statute. They were listed in a different way, but they were not modified. And so the change that we have in this proposal do reflect the actual cost looking forward to that four-year cycle of review for our fees. And I do have the number for the licensing fee for a public pool in front of me right now. The current fee for a public pool is $180. We're proposing to adjust that to $325. Then there are additional
fees. That would be an annual fee?
Annually, correct.
And if the city or a park board or school district wants to do the inspection themselves, would they be allowed to?
Madam Chair, they're required to be inspected by the licensing authority.
In some cases, Madam Chair, that is at the county or city level. We delegate that authority out.
That's correct.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one comment, I guess, not a question so much, is that I have a lot of small towns to have municipal pools, and, you know, they had this huge unallotment that came in December, and they're going to be getting reduced LGA and community support from the state, and at the same time to come around and increase, you know, taxes. And, I think we've heard there's lots of peppered adjustments in the proposals we're hearing today. It's just going to be hitting our local communities really hard.
Senator Rosen, did you have another question?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. I don't know if it's possible now for you to identify where the 11 grants, where those 11 grants went in the state, and if not, I'd be happy to look at it another time. I'm just curious if how they were distributed statewide.
There is a report that they did on it.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I'll get you that information, and the report does articulate the locations that funding was provided. It was in about eight different locations around the state.
Senator Lynch?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to request, we talked about a number of fee associated with this, with regard to this, to pools, and if you could put together a complete and thorough list of those, I think that would be helpful to the committee as we move forward.
Madam Chair, I'll do that.
Other questions about this page? Mm-hmm. Let's move on then.
Madam Chair, the next change item is to the Food Manager Certification Program. The governor is recommending adjusting food manager certification fees and the appropriation level to reflect the cost of managing this service. This program provides support to 41 local health programs that have delegation agreements for food, beverage, and lodging, and the Department of Agriculture. In addition, this program also works with hospitality industry and educators.
So, you know, I was wondering when I saw on the news the other night all these terrible things that are happening, that were happening at this peanut factory in Georgia. Do we inspect those kind of places in Minnesota that would be producing or manufacturing food products?
Madam Chair, actually the Department of Agriculture has authority to inspect, FDA has authority to inspect those. The Minnesota Department of Health inspects locations where food is delivered to the public, non-grocery settings such as restaurants, motels, those kind of settings.
Okay. Are school cafeterias a part of this fee that you charge, and do you inspect them?
Madam Chair, yes, school cafeterias are part of the inspection program, and they're licensed, and they have a licensed facilities are required to have a certified food manager on staff, and that's what this fee addresses, is the certification of those food managers.
Any other questions about this page?
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson?
Just to reiterate, I think what someone else already said, it seems to me like at the same time that we're proposing cutting local government aid, these are mandates that we've imposed on local governments, and there may be good reasons for those mandates in cases. But now we're cutting the funding that local governments will have, and yet we're increasing their costs for things that we've required them to do. I just think there's a disconnect there that's going to be very difficult to justify.
Well, I would expect, other than school districts, there aren't very many local governments that would be paying this fee. This is paid by restaurants and mm-hmm. other establishments that are serving food to the public. I mean, it might be, for example, the Minneapolis Convention Center might be involved in this, but it would be pretty rare that a local unit of government would be paying this fee.
Madam Chair, I guess I was thinking of pools on the one hand and now school districts on the other. But
right. Well, the school districts didn't get on a lot, I didn't notice. So. Other questions on this page? Okay.
Madam Chair, the next item is the Food, Beverage, and Lodging Program. The government recommends fee and appropriation adjustments for our food, beverage, and lodging establishment activities related to licensing, inspection, and plan review. These adjustments reflect the cost of services, adjustments to staffing level, and the restructuring of programs needed to perform our legislatively mandated requirements.
Any questions on this page? Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, and just a comment, but I have heard the governor talk about the need to, I think in his words, improve the business climate in this state, and he's voiced some concern with the commercial tax structure in this state. I think that's rather ironic. There are a number of provisions in here that one might be able to argue are adding further difficulty to the business climate.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, certainly they're adding additional cost to the business of doing these businesses, but this reflects the cost of overseeing those industries to ensure the public safety.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
But just to that point, I mean, how is this different than a tax? I mean, when we're providing a service, you could say that government services overall might cost more because the population's growing or whatever. But to turn around and direct something like this as a fee that's not provided, I mean, basically to support the expenses of your agency, the general expenses, I just don't see any way how that could be considered any different than a tax, a hidden tax that's not very transparent. But these are the small businesses in my district. These are the resorts and restaurants and they're not getting a tax benefit under the governor's proposal because as far as corporate tax cut, because these are small businesses, and yet they're going to have an increased tax in order to support your department. It just seems to me like I just don't see how this is under the category of what we would typically think of as a fee and not be just considered a tax increase.
Senator Olson, the reason that I asked to get the fund balances for these programs was so that we could make sure that these are not being increased to support general activities of the department, but are indeed being used to support this program activity. I think this is an important program activity. I mean, we don't personally, this is just me, I think there's a lot greater threat of people getting salmonella poisoning from a restaurant than there is of getting bird flu. And, you know, this is the program that goes out and inspects and makes sure that the restaurants are being run in a fashion that protects the public health when they're serving food. And I would agree if this money's being, if this need is being overstated and the funds being used for other activities within the department, that would not be fair. But if we look at it and see that the fund balance is such that increases are needed, then I think it's only going to be used for that activity. And we've made a decision that we're going to support this kind of activity by fees. And I think we don't want to have fewer inspections of restaurants and food handling facilities because it is an important public health risk if we do.
And Madam Chair, Senator Olson, in all of our fee programs, the money goes back to support the activities related to that fee. We do not use fee money in our department for general administrative purposes. So.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, well, maybe this is a broader debate, and I guess I don't know if we want to be having that right now, but I guess I just would have to say that whether it's to support a particular service or not, if you look more broadly at what the government does, we provide services. And so if we're just going to nickel and dime on fees based on providing services, we could charge for education or anything else that way and just call it a fee and then say somehow it wasn't a tax. So I do understand what our chair is saying about saying this is a road we've gone down and trying to make it more user-directed, but it's still a tax from my perspective.
Well, that's why they have to come back and ask us if they're going to increase it to make sure that there is a need for it to be increased. Other questions about this page? Not, let's move on then.
Madam Chair, the next proposal has to do with youth camp license and inspection program. The governor recommends creating a youth camp licensing fee and appropriating funds to cover the cost of inspection of youth camps. This is currently carried out by the department, which has a responsibility to inspect youth camps and investigate illnesses. But there is no fee that is currently charged. The department has used general funds in the past to continue this activity. The governor is recommending a fee program replace that.
How many camps like this are there?
We think there's approximately 100 youth camps in the state of Minnesota.
The other question we'd have is that if there have been general funds used in the past, where is the page reflecting the savings?
Madam Chair, we don't have that today. So.
Well, are the fees commensurate with the general fund expenditure today?
I would assume so.
Yes.
Yes.
Madam Chair, yes, they are.
Then I think we can make our own page. Certainly, Senator Coring.
Madam Chair, and how much would that be? If there's 100 camps, then what's the fee going to wind up being then for these camps?
Madam Chair and Senator Coring, it'd be
$500. $500. Okay. And Madam Chair, what are the inspections? What are you looking for in the inspections? Just to make sure it's safe for kids, or what? What are you looking for?
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, the inspections that we do for a camp are associated with health and safety. So we're looking at the water supply, sanitation systems, their wastewater system. We're also looking at the kitchen, any food handling facilities, and their practices that they utilize for food handling, as well as any lodging and sleeping facilities. Sanitation in the restrooms and in the shower areas. Again, we look for ways that they can minimize any risk to public health in all of those facilities.
Okay.
Any other questions on this page? Now let's go on.
Madam Chair, the next change item is a proposal related to manufactured home parks and recreational camping. The governor is recommending creating statutory language for operating standards for special event camping areas, a license fee category for these short-term camping areas, an adjustment of the fees and appropriations for year-round camping areas, and the oversight of manufactured home parks.
And do you have a listing of the fees by category for this area as well?
We can provide that, yes. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pretner-Solon.
I again notice that this is a 200% increase. Is that based upon the additional need for licensing these facilities?
Madam Chair, Senator Pretner-Solon, the fees for this program have not increased since 1991. So they are, in terms of actual reimbursement of the cost, they do need to be increased to cover the cost of the activity.
Doesn't answer your question. Madam Chair, I'm not sure that really answers my question. Has the increase actually amounted to a 200% increase?
Yeah, I didn't.
The cost of covering the programs are those fees actually, I mean, I know the fees are the costs of covering it actually up 200%?
Madam Chair, Senator Pretner-Solon, this change item in the governor's budget reflects the actual cost that we project over the next 4 years to actually implement this program.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
Any other questions on this page? If not, let's move on.
Madam Chair, the next change item is a change to the X-ray program fee. The governor recommends increasing the appropriations and fees for the X-ray licensing and inspection program to ensure compliance with our statutory requirements to inspect all X-ray facilities every 4 years, develop an electronic data system, and electronic business transactions to recover the cost of the program.
And in this one, you're showing a savings. So I guess the question is, why would the expenditure be bringing in more revenue than the program is expending?
Madam Chair, the program balance, as you'll see reflected in our department earning report for this program, is in a deficit mode at the moment.
This fee is covering the costs of other
Is this covering the fee? I mean, is this covering the cost then of other licensing and inspection programs besides the X-ray program?
Madam Chair, no. What this is doing is we are actually unable to inspect X-ray facilities every 4 years as required by law with our current appropriation. So this would increase the appropriation to allow us to meet our statutory requirements, and then the fee increase would actually bring the fund or the this program's fee balance in order.
Okay. So how often are you inspecting them now?
Madam Chair, we're currently, depending upon the risk associated with facility, we can be off by a year to 2 years on the facility.
Any other questions about this page? Let's move on then.
Madam Chair, the next change page relates to the lead program. Pre-renovation and renovation. The governor recommends that the department be given the authority to develop rules to adjust fees for pre-renovation notification of lead hazards and the regulation of renovation, repair, and painting activities that impact lead-based paint in child-occupied facilities. These activities are currently mandated by the EPA. Development of this program will ultimately result in the department seeking approval to operate the program in lieu of the EPA. One comment about this, actually, if we were able to implement this proposal in the governor's budget, we would be able to establish fees in Minnesota that are lower than the federal fees required by the Environmental Protection Agency.
So maybe you could get us what those fees would be and what the fees are currently.
They're on the back, Madam Chair, the federal fee rate, and on the front page is the current state fees. Proposals. So you can see there's substantial savings, Madam Chair, in Minnesota implementing this program locally.
Any questions? Let's move on then.
Madam Chair, the next change item relates to the Infected Healthcare Workers Program. The governor recommends an increase in the appropriation of $50,000 for the Infected Healthcare Worker Monitoring Program. This increase will ensure that the state is able to effectively evaluate and monitor all healthcare workers who are currently infected with HIV, hepatitis B, and C.
We're seeing a 31% increase in funding to maintain the current service level, but we don't actually see if there's a fee increase on this page. And is this fee charged to the infected worker, or is it paid by the institution they work for?
Madam Chair, this fee is collected by the boards of dentistry, nursing, and medicine based on their oversight of doctors, nurses, dentists, and other healthcare workers. Part of that money is then transferred to the Department of Health to administer this program. We actually don't administer this fee. We just implement the fee program directly.
So would it require then an increase in fees by those boards?
Madam Chair, we've talked with the boards, and there is enough of fund balance in those fees to currently absorb this increase in appropriation.
Okay. Any further questions? Let's move on then.
Madam Chair, I believe the last change page that I would present today is for the environmental certification fee. This relates to our laboratory accreditation. The governor recommends an appropriation of $150,000 per year to support the continuation of the Minnesota Environmental Lab Accreditation Program. The governor further recommends changing the fees from biannual to annual and increasing the fees to ensure the recovery of costs.
And is there some place on this page that shows what the increase will be?
This will increase the base of our program by 25%, Madam Chair, but there's no detail of the fee changes. So.
So maybe you can get that fee, what it is now and what it would be to us. Senator Laurie.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Akam. I'm curious. I believe we're finally at the end of a long list of fee increases, and I'm just wondering if there's a tally of all of these. I was sitting here trying to flip back and forth between them all, and they seem, you know, I mean, we've got the adverse health events, the food manager certification fees, the food, beverage, and lodging fees, youth camp fees, manufactured home and fees, x-ray fees. If we could get a page that tallied all of those up, I think that would be helpful to put it in context. It's quite an extensive list, and I didn't see any tally of those.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Laurie, in aggregate, all of these fee increases result in about a $4 million biennial increase to the department's SGSR fund balance.
But how much is that the amount of these fees?
Is that biennially or annually?
It's biennially.
Biennially.
That's so that's off a $86.8 million base in the biennium for fees. We would increase that by $4 million with these proposals.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Madam Chair, thank you. Committee members, I appreciate your time and patience today and questions, and we'd be happy to come back and answer any more.
So, Mr. Golden, how long is your presentation?
Well, it's about 20 minutes, but I could go faster if that would be helpful.
No, I think it might be better if we ask you to come back. We only have 5 minutes.
At your pleasure, Madam Chair.
And I think, you know, there probably will be some questions besides, so I think it would be better if we ask you to come back another time. We appreciate your bearing with us and being patient, however.
Not a problem, Madam Chair.
With that, the meeting will be adjourned.
Shannon, do you want to Shannon? Shannon? Do you want us to keep these?
No. Keep them here, please, and we're going to add.
We have to add.